Another showdown in the marriage debate. Was it the last stand for supporters of the marriage amendment? Mayors win a concession from the governor, a new tourism brand for Indiana, and beer at the state fair. That plus Tony Dungy on marriage and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 14, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, the second sentence of the marriage amendment died in the state Senate without a fight and without a vote. It led to a big celebration by opponents of the marriage amendment who made thousands of phone calls in a successful effort to build opposition to the sentence that would outlaw civil unions. It means there will be no referendum on the marriage amendment this year and none until at least 2016.
You guys should just go celebrate. This is not on the ballot. It's very exciting.
It's a rejection of intolerance and extremism. I really feel that's the case.
It means that Indiana is moving forward.
The majority of the people want marriage between one man and one woman, and that's stay in our Constitution. But we've got to learn how to put that into action.
Will the marriage amendment ever get to a referendum? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV State House reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, was that a death blow for the marriage amendment?
I think probably, and I think there's a substantial possibility they don't call it down on third reading.
Well, the first sentence is still alive, and
right.
It can pass the Senate. It's
right.
Eligible Monday.
Right, but if they don't call it down on third reading, then we're not talking about 2016. We're talking about 2018.
Or beyond.
Or later, or beyond.
Yeah.
So I think that there were not, there clearly weren't votes for the second sentence there. And I think that's good, because enshrining that kind of discrimination in the Constitution is a bad idea. It's bad public policy. And I frankly think that Senator Long handled this a lot better than the Speaker of the House handled this issue in the House. And the outcome is a good outcome for everybody who believes in tolerance.
Well, there were a couple of private caucuses among the Republicans in the state Senate. And in those caucuses, I'm guessing they took a head count, found out they didn't have the votes to have it pass. And so they didn't want to put people on the board. Is that the assumption we could make?
I think you can. What's interesting about that is that people feel so strongly about this issue on both sides that, you know, just because you said you were going to do that upstairs doesn't mean you do that on the floor. So, I mean, they could have called it, could have gone and asked it to be called down, but they didn't. And so I agree with Ann that I think President Pro Tem handled this very well from the get-go. And to say that it's done, I don't know that it is. It could come back again, but it's hard to tell, because when these things go away the way this thing went away, obviously there was a lot of sentiment there that they didn't want to deal with this anymore, and at least the majority of the people
right.
in that caucus didn't want to deal with this anymore. And so whether or not it comes back in the future will depend on what happens in various court cases that are going to absolutely going to come up around the country. And that'll
as well as here in all likelihood.
And that will determine whether this thing comes back or not down the road.
This is a huge shift in a short amount of time. And we keep talking about how the public mood has changed. But in the state Senate in 2011, 40 people voted for this with the second sentence in. They couldn't come up with 26 votes.
No, and in 2011, Tim Lannon yesterday, the Senate Minority Leader, waved the piece of paper around that this was his amendment to take out the second sentence in 2011, and it fell by a straight party line vote, and they couldn't even bring it down for a vote. So seem to tell you that the opposition to that was pretty strong. So, I mean, that's a huge shift in just 3 years. So 2 more years, potentially, until you have to vote on this again, at least on the ballot, maybe in the General Assembly, that could be a death knell.
Very unusual, from my experience, and I've been down there for a little bit, to have a major issue like this go away without a vote.
Yeah, it's really unprecedented. You know, especially when you talk about a second reading amendment, which are, you know, they're sometimes contentious, but they're very run-of-the-mill. And so for the bill to come up and not to have an amendment added being the big story was really unusual and very interesting to watch. I do think it's goose's cooked. And I do think that the people who are for HJR 3 should be careful, because I think that the momentum that was generated by Freedom Indiana may be redirected, and there may be a movement to remove the law.
Well, yeah. one of those people is State Senator Mike Delf, Republican from Carmel, who had drawn up the amendment to reinsert the second sentence. He apparently, at the direction of those in his caucus, chose not to present it. Yet last night he went on what I've called a Twitter tirade. He has for a number of hours made dozens of posts on Twitter challenging leadership, challenging church groups in his district, raising issues related to the Bible. And now he says he's got a big announcement on Monday, and the speculation is that he will challenge David Long. Where do you think that goes?
I don't think it goes anywhere, but it shows just how out of touch he is. I mean, the rant is ridiculous. I mean, he's talking about the end of the republic and challenging hundreds of years of constitutional law. I mean, he's just off the deep end on this issue, and the public mood has changed, and people don't like the idea of enshrining intolerance in the Constitution. The statute's still there if it withstands another judicial challenge. But you're right about that. The momentum is shifting so fast that the next move may be to repeal the underlying statute, and I wouldn't be surprised to see that come up in the next session or two.
Mike Delf also tweeted when he came out of caucus and said this is dead because there aren't enough votes, and apparently drew a rebuke from David Long, the Republican leader. I mean, he's challenging leadership, whether he makes this a formal challenge or not. This is a very unusual approach to losing any issue.
That's true. There's an unspoken rule about caucus. What goes on in caucus stays in caucus. You might compare it to Las Vegas from that standpoint.
Or the confessional.
Almost. I mean, that's the rule. In all four caucuses, that's supposed to be the rule. And when somebody goes and says, you know, tells everybody in the world what's happened before they ever get out of the room, then it's no wonder that they got angry the way they did with him. And the reason that you have that caucus and have that discussion in that room, and I've been in that room as part of when I was working in the state Senate and heard some of those kinds of discussions. And the whole idea is to keep it there, keep it inside the family, let everybody have their say, let all the emotions get out there in the open where everybody can really know what everybody else in the caucus feels. And then it's supposed to stay there. And when that rule is broken inside the family, then you got problems.
So beyond what he said about the second sentence, this Twitter tirade that he's been conducting, is that useful?
Well, I think it's a continuation of what happened right after the thing happened, and he feels very passionate about this. I mean, there's no question about that. I mean, he always has. But still, when you let your emotions get the better of you like that, usually it comes back to haunt you, and it could in this case. But that's supposed to stay in that room. Mm-hmm. And that's where the family has their discussion, and it's supposed to be right there, and it didn't, and that's a problem.
They have a family split. The Democrats have been united against this, but the Republicans
have...
No,
the Democrats all of a sudden are united against it. The Democrats,
they twisted,
now see this as a...
They twisted as many arms on this as anybody did.
There's some Democrats who changed their vote from 2011.
Yeah. Sure, there are
exactly.
Republicans who changed
sure.
their
and
vote
sure.
from 2011 as well.
Sure.
But the Democrats have been united on this, and the division is within the Republican Party, and it's divisive. Yeah. Now, I'm just wondering when Senator Long looks out over the horizon and sees what campaigns he's going to support in the future, whether he supports Senator Delf's reelection or his allies' reelection.
Who's
I think
up,
that would be interesting.
He's up this year. He's got a Democrat opponent, but it's a very Republican district.
Well, we'll see. When he starts attacking the churches and his own constituents within the district, he might not be quite as popular despite his label.
Governor Mike Pence responded to bipartisan attacks this week from Indiana mayors. First, the mayors blasted the governor's plan that calls for elimination of a business equipment tax. They said lost money to cities could lead to closed parks and cuts in police and fire service. Hours later, several of the mayors were invited to a private meeting with Pence where, for the first time, he suggested a way to pay for cuts to schools and local governments.
He conveyed to us that he now supports full state replacement funding. We felt really, really receptive to that. We're grateful for the governor's consideration.
That is Evansville Mayor Lloyd Winicky. Mike McDaniel, why did the governor change his position?
He didn't.
Well, he
on
he,
December,
the week before,
on December
the,
5th,
the week
on
before,
December 5th, when he announced this program, he said, I don't want this to hurt the local communities.
Unduly harm.
Unduly.
Way he said that.
Which suggests some
right.
harm.
Well, that still could happen. There still could yeah. be some. But if they go with the Senate Bill 1 that eliminates it for those with $25,000 in property, and it's still what turns out, how many million is that, John?
Just 54. For that?
54 million. Right. Well, he's saying now that the state would absorb that 54 million. Well, you know, saying it and getting it done are two different things. But from the very get-go, he has never talked about taking $1 billion away from cities and towns or universities and schools.
Oh, that's right.
And that's exactly right.
But so. He never
but
talked
week,
about how to
but
pay
But the
anymore.
Week before, he wouldn't say that there was going to be state
and,
replacement
and this is, I've right. said every time this has come up in this show that they're not going to do that, and they right. aren't. That you can't do that. You can't take away $1 billion off the table from cities, towns, and schools and universities.
Okay, so this was interesting in a number of ways, one of which is that Lloyd Winicky made the announcement, not the governor. He issued a statement later, written statement, but he didn't say he supported state replacement. He said he's open to state replacement. Is there a difference?
Oh, yeah, there's a big difference. You know, the devil's in the details. I think he's out there, and I think, frankly, if I were Mayor Winicky, I would have done the exact same thing, put it out there that the governor said that, and then he's backtracking if he doesn't support that total state replacement. But I don't know where the money comes. If we're talking about $1 billion on this, not the 54 million.
No, you're talking about 54 million.
Okay, if we're only talking about 54 million, they'll be able to find that. But right. if he's going to be, if that's going to be step one in elimination on that, where does that money come from except out of schools?
Okay. But 54 million the first year, and we just saw that the state was $38 million short on January revenues. Is 54 million a problem for the state?
Yes, 54 million is a problem currently, and probably in the future because of the circumstance we've got with the surplus situation and the lack of revenue coming in. A lot of it's probably due to the weather, but that a lot of it's not going to come back because that's lost entertainment, so taxes from that will not come back. People may buy other things, but we're going to be short. It's difficult anyway, especially when you pile on the other programs the governor wants to spend money on. I don't think you can find even $54 million.
And so the governor sat down and made a commitment to the mayors and made them happy, but apparently he hadn't sent the word upstairs at that point, and there were some legislators who were unhappy.
Well, that's true, and the governor's statement also said that he's still supportive of the House plan, which is to let local governments decide whether to cut this tax on all new equipment, and the local
which
mayors...
Which he says would be a local decision.
Right, but local mayors think they'll get pressured into cutting this no matter what, and so where does the money come from then? I think that's their biggest problem. The $54 million, if the state can find it, that's at least an easier task, despite its
right.
shortfalls.
Right.
But if they're going to pressure locals into cutting this tax down the line, which mayors say is going to happen, then where do you find the money then?
Yeah. It's completely fiscally irresponsible.
Well, but you know, what's interesting to me is hours before this private meeting, the mayors held a news conference, and Mayor Ballard from Indianapolis, who's a Republican, joined with other mayors, including Mayor Winicky, who's a Republican, and I've never seen a governor's priority blasted the way they blasted that.
Well, I mean, they feel like if you're talking about $1 billion, yes, they would be under assault, but that's not what's being talked about here. Well, and that was made very clear to these folks,
right.
and that's why the governor said what he said about finding revenue for the program in Senate Bill 1.
And their mood changed.
And I asked the fiscal leadership about whether or not there had been any communication from the governor's office. They told me there had been, and that they continue to negotiate this process with the governor's office. So saying that they didn't communicate it with upstairs, I don't think is accurate.
Well, I do think that this demonstrates just how much Governor Pence wants this, because he's willing to change it and change it significantly after the mayors have taken after him for the program. So I think he wants this badly.
Get ready to hear and see Honest to Goodness Indiana a lot soon. That slogan is the Indiana Department of Tourism's new brand. It replaces Restart Your Engines. The state plans to spend about $1 million on the campaign. The promotion will target Indianapolis. We asked people around town what they think.
Honest to Goodness? It seems about Indiana. It's about right.
I like the brand. It looks really good.
John Ketzenberger, Honest to Goodness?
Honest to goodness, Beaver, we're back in 1958. I mean, that's the first thing that comes to mind when I think of that. First of all, I think it's difficult to come up with a slogan that encapsulates, a state, especially one that's, is diverse when you come to all the different attractions. I think it's a great idea. I think you should try to promote movement within the state, help folks see what's out there. But it's also $1 million is not going to make much of an effect, and I think that's another shortfall here. So I hopefully, they'll put some more money behind it, and I'll be wrong about the slogan.
Well, they say they were ready for criticism, and they said that there will be other messages that are attached to Honest to Goodness Indiana, and it'll make more sense then.
I hope so. but I know that Honest to Goodness Indiana leaves you really open to parody and mocking, as we've already seen some of that, and the full campaign hasn't even been rolled out. So they're going to have to do something to kind of counteract the skepticism with which this is being received.
Should they have come out with the longer message at the same time?
Well, if there was one thing I would do differently if I were doing it, I would put it in the context of how they're going to use it.
Right.
Just throwing the slogan out there is one thing, but you don't know how that's going to look in an ad, what the references are, so forth and so on. So you got to wait and see what that is. I do agree with John that $1 million is a drop in the bucket. We have never been fully committed to tourism promotion in Indiana, and we need to be because it's a huge business for the state. It's one of the biggest businesses we have, and we ought to do more to promote it.
I was going to say, I think if you went out and took a survey last week and asked people what the state's tourism slogan was, very few would come
Couldn't
up with Restart Your Engines.
Yeah, Restart Your Engines.
It's not Wander Indiana.
Wander Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah. But they put some money behind Wander Indiana. That's
well, they did. And it was on every license plate.
Yeah.
And I had people say to me, where is that Wander Indiana?
Yeah. I don't think
they spent $100,000 for somebody to come up with this.
I think Mike would have done it for half that. And it probably would have been better than
Honest.
I'm not going
to say what I usually say about that.
Anyway, I don't really, frankly, think the slogan makes a whole hell of a lot of difference. The dollars for tourism and the convention business, which is big
exactly.
for Indianapolis,
that's what's considered
is
tourism.
What we need to keep building on. The slogans,
well,
anyway.
Well,
I'm back with you. That's the first thing I thought of was leave it to Beaver. Yeah. Well, Father knows best.
Right.
As an aside, this whole debate over the marriage amendment is something that resonated.
We're not intolerant.
No, it resonated with meeting planners. The folks in the convention industry were worried about HJR 3 going to a referendum. They thought that would hurt the convention
business.
Land
of tolerance. That's what we should have done.
Yeah, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is Honest to Goodness Indiana a good tourism brand? Your choices are A, Honest to Goodness, B, WTH, or C, geez, we paid what for that? Last week's question was, are you willing to pay higher taxes for a better bus system? 47% said yes, 53% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Craft breweries and wineries are pushing for repeal of a law banning alcohol sales at the Indiana State Fair. A House committee heard testimony on the proposal this week. State Fair Director Cindy Hoy says alcohol likely would be sold in an enclosed area open only to fairgoers 21 and older. But critics are skeptical about a potential for underage drinking. The last alcohol-related offense reported during the fair was in 2007. Brandon Smith, should there be beer at the fair?
I think in the context that Cindy Hoy and the State Fair Commission are talking about, yeah. It's a way to promote Indiana craft beers, Indiana wines. That's that's the whole point of the State Fair is to promote Indiana, to promote Indiana agriculture. And you're leaving out a huge section of Indiana agriculture more and more if you're leaving out craft beer and wineries. We heard 2 years ago there were 39 craft breweries in Indiana. There are now 82. To ignore it is to ignore a significant section of the state.
Okay, are the craft breweries and the farm wineries, are they a reason or an excuse in this argument?
Oh, I think they're a reason. You know, in 2007, when they had the last offense, which was likely some poor drunk on the Midway, which, by the way, there are plenty of drunks on the Midway if they're worried about beer at the fair. In 2007, there were maybe 10 craft breweries in the state. So I think Brandon's absolutely right about the explosion of that as a segment of the industry, and that's a very lucrative segment of the industry in Indiana. It should be celebrated. It's not an excuse. It's a good reason.
Okay, so what about folks who worry about the influence on children who come to the fair? It's a state-sponsored activity.
Come on. I mean, they don't bury the kids' head in the sand. Their parents have beer and have wine when they go out to restaurants in their home as well. I think you have it in a contained area in some fashion where only 21-year-olds can go. It makes absolutely perfect sense.
Does it?
Only two states in the union that don't have this at their state fairs. Indiana's one of them. It's more than time. I can't think of anything better than on a hot day having a good gumball head at the Indiana State Fair.
Who are you getting a plug in for now?
Gumball head.
Three Floyds, man.
Munster, Indiana.
Fine stuff.
All right. Okay. One of those craft beers.
That's it.
All right. We used to have beer at the fair.
Up till 1946. Towards the end of the State Fair in 1946, they ran out of the plastic or paper cups that they'd been selling the stuff in, and so they went to glass bottles. And by the end of the fair, there was glass littering the entire state fairgrounds. That led to a reactionary kick to just ban alcohol entirely, and it's never been revived since, though it looks like the prospects are pretty good this year.
Okay.
So every 70 years or so, we can reverse policy.
Seems like an overreaction?
Oh, yeah. You think? So let's do it. Let's all have a good craft beer.
Just
and
like
toast
another
it.
Saturday night at St. Cloud State University,
my alma mater, where it's a good German community. I'll just say that. All right, former Colts coach Tony Dungy is selling a new book. He and his wife Lauren collaborated on the book called "Uncommon Marriage." Dungy says, in some ways, marriage is a lot like football.
You have some bad losses. The year we went to the Super Bowl, we lost the game 44-17, and everyone said the world's coming to an end. They can't beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. Well, we went back and made a few adjustments, and we ended up winning the Super Bowl. So one loss or one bad moment doesn't mean that it's over.
All right, now we're back to the marriage debate. In 2007, Tony Dungy
left it for 10
can't
minutes.
Get away from it. Can't get away from it. In 2007, Tony Dungy spoke out against gay marriage. No mention of that on his book tour.
Well, I assume that his position on this has evolved, like a number of we've talked about the social movement towards tolerance in this. He's just part of the crowd. That's good.
I don't know that for sure, but that's one of the problems we've had with the marriage debate here is it's hard to bring anything up and not get back into it.
Tony Dungy's been a champion of trying to help mentor people in their relationships for a long time. He's written three good books that I know of that are really excellent books that deal with these subjects, and more power to him. I think he's doing a great work.
Who would have thought that Tony Dungy would end up being a best-selling author?
Well, if you look at I think he was such a leader in the community when he was here in Indianapolis and down in Tampa Bay as well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me at all that he would be a best-selling author. He's a guy with a lot of great thoughts that I think a lot of people want to hear.
Do people care what he thinks about marriage?
Well,
I
he's
think
best
they do.
Selling, so somebody's
well,
buying.
This one's not a best seller.
Well, not yet.
This one's not.
I do think. I think that he is a compelling figure. He does tell the story well. He does lead thought in many of these areas, and so I do think that people do care and probably should. If we were more thoughtful about our lives, if we were more thoughtful about our public participation in our lives, then we would all be better off. So good for him for helping that out.
All right. Before we go, let's finish with the marriage debate. The vote in the state Senate Monday, will that be the last time we hear about the marriage amendment in the Indiana General Assembly?
I really hope so. I really hope that the grassroots movement that pushed so many public officials to talk to their legislators, it shows you how grassroots politics can actually work. I hope it's gone.
Probably, Brandon.
That limb is cracked.
No, but it might. Yeah, no, but it might be the last serious time we hear about the marriage debate.
Right. I don't think it ever gets another hearing in a committee or on the floor or anything like that. And I do think the federal government will take it out of the state's hands sometime in the not so distant future.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike McDaniel, Brandon Smith of IPBS, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/podcast, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.